We're on the air with renowned D.C. attorney Montgomery Blair Sibley. And in our history books, people have heard of your 19th century grandfather, Montgomery Blair, who actually helped President Lincoln become president, I understand.
Yes, Montgomery Blair was very instrumental in Lincoln's campaign and served in his cabinet as Postmaster General.
Right. In fact, he was the first one to introduce the postal money order, I understand.
Yeah, indeed.
And revolutionized delivery of the mail using the rail system at the time. And he was also involved with the Dred Scott decision.
Dred Scott was ultimately freed through some legal maneuvers most people don't know about.
But that's truly an amazing lineage. And then I see something that you wrote online, too, where you quote 2 Timothy, "I fought the good fight and I keep the faith." Can you tell us what is the good fight for you?
If we listen, we are all called to do something significant with the gift we have of life, particularly being born in the United States of America.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you mentioned a little bit of my heritage. I feel that weight on my shoulders as well. And so, you know, you've got to fight the good fight, finish your course, and keep the faith, and then the kingdom of heaven will be yours. So those are the sort of operating principles I operate under.
Beautiful thoughts. And of course, today we want to talk about the Article 5 Convention, and you're involved with that. In simple layman's terms, can you tell us what Article 5 Convention is, what it means to American citizens?
Well, sure. When the Constitution was being debated and drafted, one of the concerns was allowing for changes in the document in the future because of changed circumstances. And one of the things that the founders figured out was that the way to do that was to allow amendments to the Constitution. We've had 27 amendments over the last 250 some odd years. The point that became a contention was, how do you go about amending it?
Mm-hmm.
And the end result was that if 3/4 of the United States, or the states in the United States, approved an amendment, it became official. And then the question became, well, who's going to propose the amendments those states are going to consider? And two routes were chosen. First, Congress can propose amendments and has done, and those are the basis of the 27 amendments we now have. But in their intimate and ultimate wisdom, the founders also realized that maybe the federal government would get out of control, and as a result, they had a second route to propose those amendments for the states' ultimate consideration. And that second route is a convention to propose amendments that then would be subsequently considered by the various states.
So states can essentially rise up through the vote and outweigh the Congress and the Senate in making a decision to amend the Constitution.
The route of the path to that convention to propose amendments still goes through Congress. So when 2/3 of the states make an application to Congress, Congress is then triggered by Article 5 to call a convention to propose amendments. And just to be really clear about this, at that convention to propose amendments, the Constitution is not amended. Only an amendment is proposed, which then is circulated among the,
right,
the several states. And if 3/4 of those states approve of the amendment, then it becomes law, much like, you know, the 27 amendments we now have.
I had read something online that stated Congress might still be able to meddle a bit in that process, make it a closed door session or something, and possibly still mix it up. You know where I'm going with this?
Well, I do, Chuck. And if I can address it briefly, here's the reason I've actually filed this lawsuit I think we're going to shortly talk about.
Right, right.
The only thing we know about this convention to propose amendments is the 11 or 12 words in Article 5. The Supreme Court has never addressed it. The founders left no definitive documents as to its scope and dimensions. And nobody's had an opportunity to find what Congress's exact role is, short of calling this convention to propose amendments. As everyone is making noise and arguing this, that, and the other thing, ultimately our United States Supreme Court, which is saddled with the obligation to interpret our Constitution, has got to come in and define the parameters of what this is going to look like. And that's why I filed my lawsuit.
You filed in a lower court, though, right? For a specific reason?
Yeah, there's some hyper-technical legalities involved here. But the long and short of it is this. The whole reason I'm doing this is because I believe our federal system is corrupt at the judicial branch, it's corrupt at the legislative branch, and it's corrupt at the executive branch.
Mm-hmm.
So were I to go in and say in the federal Article 3 judicial branch, it's time for Congress to call a convention, I would be kicked out of court because citizens don't have the right to enforce the Constitution under a 1994 ruling called Lujan versus Defenders of Wildlife, which says ordinary citizens can't force the government to behave according to law. You have to have something what's called standing. So to avoid that problem, I actually sued in the D.C. District of Columbia Superior Court, which is a state court, in all intents and purposes, created under Article 1 of the Constitution, not Article 3. As a result, it has jurisdiction to move forward, and I'm not barred by that standing argument, as best as I can understand, going forward. So that's the procedural reason we're in D.C. Superior Court, or at least we were, until McConnell moved us back to federal court.
And what effect might that have?
Well, in federal court, where we now sit, the defendants, McConnell and Boehner, are arguing that the case has to be dismissed because I don't have that aforementioned standing to bring the suit. So basically, they said, we're taking you from a court where you have the right to enforce your rights as a citizen against the government to a court which now does not have those rights. And that's sort of the very rich argument that will be played out in July through legal arguments and decided by the court, federal court, sometime in July or early August, I imagine.
And the bottom line with this is a lot of groups and yourself are coming to our government and stating for a long time now we've had enough petitions from enough states that the Article 5 convention can actually be
called.
Called, yes.
No, not can be called, must be called,
yeah.
Because the Article 5 says Congress shall call the convention. It isn't discretionary by Congress at all. Once they get 34 applications from 34 different states for a convention, then you have to call a convention. They don't have any choice. And my complaint lists 35 states.
At least 35.
As recorded in the congressional record, made such an application.
Obviously, there's some corruption going on if they won't even listen.
That's not some. There is a total corruption of our system, which is why this, I believe, is the only recourse as citizens we have to redistribute power among the states and the people where it originally belonged and resided before, you know, starting in 1920s, when power was more and more concentrated in the Supreme Court and our Congress. And obviously, now you have one representative for every 700,000 citizens, as opposed to one for every 30,000, as originally envisioned. Mm-hmm. And our senators are completely controlled by big money interests rather than the state legislatures, which originally elected our senators. Most people don't remember that under the original Constitution, for the state of Virginia, for example, its House of Burgess would elect the two senators from that state. It wasn't a popular election. And it wasn't until the 1900s that amendment occurred that changed that to a popular election, much to the detriment of the process, I believe.
You know, I think the average citizen wouldn't really understand how their vote doesn't count any longer.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, we're running up for the presidential election. It's just a circus right now. But at the end of the day, it's going to be the big money of Bush against the big money of Clinton. You know, it no longer addresses the problem that the system is so corrupt. It doesn't matter who we elect anymore because we're all just completely at its mercy. And that's where redistributing the power back to the states to rein in the federal government, to rein in the federal judiciary, I think is the only medicine this country can possibly take to cure the ills it has.
Essentially, by the time citizens vote, I understand, it doesn't matter who's elected because it's all big business that has chosen the ones we vote on anyway.
Exactly my point. So now, if I were to redistribute the representatives in Congress from the 435 we have now, to what should probably be 8,000 to 9,000 in districts of 30,000 each, we're going to have completely destroyed the power of the Democratic and Republican parties. Each representative will be accountable to the 30,000 people he represents. And as a result, we'll have a representative form of government that really reflects the will and the concerns of the people, mm-hmm. rather than the will and concerns of the people who can afford to buy the 435 representatives we have now.
I had always wondered about that, how so few people could represent all of us. So thanks for bringing clarity to that. And I think I understand now that's why you wanted to repeal the 17th Amendment. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's my personal political agenda. I think there's very strong arguments that if we're, you know, we have helicopters flying around D.C. today in packs of three. You can hear them in the background. I'm going to let them go over for a second. We don't know what's going on. But I have personal ideas of what amendments to the Constitution should be proposed. Mark Levin has proposed some very interesting ones. But that's the purpose for having the convention, is to hammer out ideas and then put them down to try to address some of the major ills our structure of government now is suffering under.
How does a regular citizen like me get involved? Is there anything we can do? Are we completely impotent? What can be done?
People first have to educate themselves onto this path, which I am promoting as the best one for the country to move forward to address its political structural problems. And if they agree and they think it's wise, I think the next step is writing that letter to your representative and to your senator saying, hey, you have have an obligation to call this convention. Would you please start the process to call it and let's define what it's going to be? And the next time you're up for election, I promise I will show up at some public forum and I'm going to ask you the question, how come if the Constitution imposed a duty on you to call a convention, you failed to do so?
Mm-hmm.
And I think those are the tough questions we have to start putting to these representatives. They are breaching their duty, their oath of office. And quite frankly, I think it's actionable as a civil, if not a criminal matter.
Do you have any idea at all how major media has completely swept this under the rug?
You know, I don't, Chuck, because I don't really listen to the major media. I don't consider it a constructive use of the limited time I have on the planet, because it's just completely a noise machine right now to just fill space between the advertisements to pay for it.
Okay, and I don't either, and I'm in the media, and I can't figure it out. I don't know what happened to news reporters. This whole story with Doug Hughes, you know, the airspace, that wasn't the story.
Exactly.
That's all that was covered, and I can't imagine any reporter worth a hill of beans would have reported it that way without actually investigating the whole story and finding out why Doug Hughes flew that gyrocopter onto the White House lawn.
Well, exactly. He wasn't a lunatic, Chuck.
No,
he wasn't,
no.
You know, this idiot down in Charleston. He was somebody who had a very firm political conviction and was expressing a First Amendment right, albeit in a rather peculiar way, to bring it to the public's attention. And of course, the media didn't ask the questions of him, why are you doing this? They just, you know, focused on the fact that he flew his gyrocopter in.
How are we going to do with this, Attorney Sibley? This lawsuit that you have in court that they must call the Article 5 convention.
They'll goof me around in the U.S. District Court through August, through the summer. I think I will get a remanded back down to D.C. Superior Court, where we will address the technical legal arguments of whether the political question doctrine, the speech and debate clause have any kind of bearing on this issue, which I don't think they do. And I expect to be dismissed at D.C. Superior Court. I will file and perfect an appeal by Halloween in the Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia. And by hopefully New Year's, I'll be filing at the U.S. Supreme Court and let them then accept the barrage of amicus curiae petitions that will flow in from all other interested parties on why this issue needs to be decided. So that's the 10 or 11 month plan that I have laid out here in this litigation strategy.
And, you know, I do hear a little bit of noise coming from Congress from some people stating Doug has a point. This has been corrupt for a long time. Even Hillary Clinton mentioned something about how big money in Congress has been a problem. So, you know, you've made some strides already.
Well, we're all throwing straw on the back of the camel of tyranny, Chuck, and I'm just throwing another straw. I'll be glad when that camel's back is broken, but who knows which straw is going to actually do it. But we just got to keep piling it on, and sooner or later it will.
Anyone listening today, do you recommend any websites or any groups to go look for or be involved with?
I think your direct representation is the best way to go forward, and that's why I encourage people to contact their congresspeople, their representatives and their senators, and say, hey, you've gotten 35 applications, and you can always get my lawsuit offline with the list, and or other people have lists as well. How come you're not discharging your duty to call the convention? I mean, because my lawsuit will become a class action, including all 535 members of Congress, once we get through this procedural nonsense at the district court. So every member of Congress will be part of this lawsuit by the time I'm done. So they're all going to get notice that they have a duty they're breaching and they don't do anything about it. That's something they should be held accountable for.
I don't know if this is a silly question, but can they be personally held accountable?
Well, you see, that's an interesting question, because you can be impeached from Congress for breaching your legislative duties. And this is a legislative duty I believe they've breached.
I'm going to speak for myself and a few of the citizens around here. We sure do appreciate you more than you know.
Well, thank you for that.
Yeah, well, thank you for caring enough, because there are so many attorneys and large law firms that just simply wouldn't handle a case like this.
That brings you back to what I call Sibley's Law, Chuck, if I might, which
sure.
is if you can do something, you should. If you're the only one who can do something, you must. And I find myself in the peculiar situation that I there may be others who would know how to do this, but for whatever personal reasons, they won't. So I sort of feel I'm obligated, because I know I can, because it takes something of a skill set to navigate these litigation nonsense and, you know, the law firms, the McConnell and Boehner are throwing against me right now. So.
And speaking again with Montgomery Blair Sibley about the Article 5 lawsuit that's going on presently, anything else that you'd like to leave us with?
Chuck, I'm going to keep you updated. So when I have something interesting,
do.
I'll give you a call and I'll update your listeners on what's been going on.
We'll keep in touch with you. Thank you so much.
Have a good day, Chuck.